This is After Deadline. I'm Steve Forrester. Non-government organizations, so-called NGOs, have become a sort of fourth branch of government. In some arenas, they do the work that we would expect of government, if it were capable of setting goals and making decisions. Here at the mouth of the Columbia River, land trusts are significant players. Just yesterday, the Columbia Land Trust announced the purchase of 81 acres along North Nema River, which flows into Willapa Bay. To talk with us today about the North Nema purchase and larger matters, my guests represent the Columbia Land Trust, a Vancouver-based organization with an office in Astoria. Jennifer Sims is past president and board member of the trust. Nadia Gardner, who is located in Astoria, is coast and estuary conservation manager. So, Jennifer Sims, what is a land trust, and where does Columbia Land Trust fit in the galaxy that includes here the North Coast Land Conservancy and on the national level the Nature Conservancy?
Well, thank you for having us here today, Steve. A land trust, as you were mentioning, is a nonprofit organization, and land trusts work with landowners and communities to conserve land and to steward that land with a variety of different focuses. They can conserve wildlife habitat, they can aim to create recreation opportunities or maybe save cultural and historical sites. There are 1,700 land trusts across the nation with over 100,000 volunteers and 5 million members who are working toward a common goal of land conservation. And all of those land trusts have conserved about 37 million acres of land in the United States, about the size of all of New England. It's huge. The Columbia Land Trust is focused specifically on the lands from the mouth of the Columbia up to about the John Day River, on 50 miles on either side. It started as a volunteer organization.
This is the John Day River.
Not the John Day River that's here. It's the John Day River that's way up in eastern Oregon.
Good. Yeah, there are two of them. Yeah.
I never understood that.
John Day got around.
Yeah, really. So that's kind of the scale of the work that we're doing. And our mission is to conserve and care for vital lands and waters, wildlife of the Columbia River region. So that's what we're working to
And
do.
You do that by facilitating property transactions?
We do. We have two different basic tools that we use. We either buy the land, or it's nice, sometimes the landowner actually donates it to us, or we can do what's called a conservation easement, where we actually purchase or have donated the development rights, and that's called a conservation easement. And that way the land can be conserved.
And in total, we've conserved about 24,000 acres of land. Excuse me. Of that, about half, 12,000 acres, we own in fee title. It means we have the ownership of the land. And then we also have about 2,500 acres in conservation easement. So fairly significant. We also work quite a bit with partners, agencies, federal and state, and primarily some local as well. We work very closely with Clark County, Vancouver, Metro around the Portland region, and we help them meet their complementary goals, whether it be parks, recreation, or natural areas as well. And we help to facilitate or even buy land and transfer to them. And we've done that quite a lot. We have about 1,200 acres of land that we've done that.
Right. We'll get to those partnerships later. While we're on the subject of the land trust, the basics of the land trust, when did it form and who formed it?
Well, that's a wonderful story because, and a story of success, actually. In 1990, a group of people in Clark County, Vancouver, Washington, saw that there was a lot of development occurring up and down the river that was really threatening the ambiance and lifestyle that we all love and enjoy. And they got together as volunteers and created this nonprofit. And for about the first decade of the organization's existence, it was run by a group of volunteers. They decided that they needed to improve their effectiveness by getting some staff. And today, amazingly, we have 25 staff, 4 offices. So in addition to the one here in Astoria and Vancouver headquarters, we have one in Portland and in Hood River. And Columbia Land Trust is really now considered a medium-sized land trust in the scale of the United States. Now,
yes.
You mentioned the Nature Conservancy. That's really the biggest.
Yes.
There are many land trusts across the country that are still all volunteer, and they can do effective work, but we think we've really leveraged the money that people donate to us. Mm. We have expanded the work that we can do by having staff, like Nadia, who is, by the way, just totally amazing with the work that she's been doing.
What is your annual budget?
It's about $2 million.
Okay.
For the operation.
Sure.
And then the amount that we have for our acquisition, either easements or fee simple, is can vary considerably. For example, just to give you an idea how much it can vary, we have been working on buying some lands on the south slopes of Mount St. Helens, and that's in the millions of dollars.
Sure.
So sometimes the people donate the land, and we don't need much of a budget except the staff.
Before we leave the topic of the trust's origins, so often with these organizations, if you track them back, it really comes down to a few people who did get together. Are there any names that you can remember from that period?
A lot of them. They're still very involved in the organization,
sure.
which is wonderful for us.
Yeah.
One of them is Glenn Lamb, who is now our executive director.
Okay.
Bill Dygert, who lives locally.
In Vancouver.
Well, he has a home here.
Oh, in Astoria.
He does.
Glenn Dygert, okay.
No, Bill Dygert.
Bill Dygert, I'm sorry.
Glenn Lamb is our executive director,
yeah.
and Bill Dygert.
Okay.
And I think his wife's name is Linda.
Mm-hmm.
And then Kathy Dietrich,
mm-hmm.
who lives in Vancouver,
okay.
Or actually Battleground. Terry Cornelius. So mm-hmm. those are all, you know, people who've been...
Who were there at the start.
Very, very much in the beginning.
Okay. This is After Deadline, if you've just joined us. I'm your host, Steve Forrester, and I'm speaking with Jennifer Sims and Nadia Gardner of the Columbia Land Trust. Well, so conservation and restoration of wildlife habitat are major objectives of the trust. Tell us more about how you achieve that using some examples that, you know, of some property parcels that you have picked up.
Sure. The Columbia Land Trust actually has four initiatives, and of those, the largest, the strongest program is really around vital wildlife habitat. We also, though, do some work around conserving agricultural lands, particularly in the Trout Lake Valley up on Mount Adams. We also focus on maintaining working forests, particularly around Mount St. Helens in Washington. And we also have an initiative called Nature Close to Home, which works in the Vancouver-Portland metropolitan area. And that really tries to conserve special places where a lot of people live and get especially youth and people involved and interested in nature and wildlife. And we have a beautiful program called the Backyard Habitat Program in the metro area where our staff will actually come and help metro area landowners enhance their sometimes very small properties, 50 by 100 lots, up to a couple acres within that urban boundary to try to enhance their wildlife habitat in their backyards. But what we work on mostly out in the Columbia Pacific region is the Vital Wildlife Habitat Initiative, and that's what I work on primarily. And I consider myself to be a conservation planner. So what I do is I use GIS mapping, so it's a computer program that produces maps but also organizes data around, you know, where do endangered and threatened species live, where are their wetlands, where are their stream corridors, where are their trails, and really I look at the larger landscape and say, okay, well, if we we're going to focus our work, how do we focus our work? What are the most special places for both wildlife and people, and how do we prioritize those? And then I also look at funding sources as well as landowner willingness. Are there people that are interested in conserving their land? And so once that kind of initial planning work is done, then I reach out to landowners, or sometimes landowners reach out to me. That happens all the time. Every week someone calls me and they say, I want to conserve my land, or I want to conserve my neighbor's land, so I have this beautiful place next door.
And from there, we look at, as Jennifer said, you know, we under special circumstances, we can maybe raise the money to purchase a property. Sometimes landowners are willing to sell property for less than appraised value, and that's called a bargain sale, or we may take a full donation of that property. Sure. And that may be, you know, the actual ownership of the land, the fee simple ownership, or an easement. For me, in this region, it tends to be more of the fee simple ownership of the land.
Okay. You mentioned among your objectives is the preservation of agricultural lands, which is a very interesting topic because Washington State, I think, had or the federal government had a farmland preservation program going, and I think it may have lapsed, although I can't remember, and except for Oregon's land use law, which really emphasizes agricultural land. There isn't much going on in the U.S. in that regard. So talk a little bit about how you identify farmlands to preserve them, and how do you do that?
Well, as I said, I think, you know, right now the Land Trust is really focusing on this one area at the base of Mount Adams, because that area, as you said, in Washington and Oregon have very different land use laws. Oregon has a more restrictive conversion law, so you can't as easily take working forests and working agriculture and convert them into subdivisions, for example. Washington doesn't have that sort of protection. They have some around special tax assessments. But really, in my view, some of those farmlands in Washington are much more threatened because of that. And this Trout Lake Valley was identified as a priority because people were moving in. It's so beautiful there. And there's a really strong, actually, organic dairy industry there. But people were moving in, and the prices were coming up, and building houses in places that were actually interfering with the large landscape dairy operations that were occurring. And so luckily in Washington, the Recreation and Conservation Office has a great program for agricultural preservation, and that Trout Lake Valley project that my coworkers Melanie Moon and Sherry Carney are working on was the top ranked project in the last biennium. So we're really excited about the strength of that initiative and the grant funding available in Washington.
Okay. If you've just joined us, this is After Deadline, and we're talking about the Columbia Land Trust, and my guests are Jennifer Sims and Nadia Gardner. Well, we've talked about the North Nema River deal, which just happened yesterday. It was announced yesterday, and you've done two others recently around Mount St. Helens and the Columbia River. So let's take them one at a time. I know these things typically take a while to put together, deals like this. Walk us through the North Nema River deal that you just announced yesterday. How did that come together?
So, again, it was really an outgrowth of our conservation planning. Back in 2008, Glenn Lamb and myself did a kind of back-of-the-napkin type community outreach where we, compiled a list of community leaders that lived around Willapa Bay and Long Beach Peninsula, and we went to each of them. And they're all experts in their own right because they have such a rich history and love for the place in which they live. And we said, okay, well, if we know that the Long or North Beach Peninsula and Willapa Bay are incredibly important. It's the second largest estuary bay on the West Coast after San Francisco, and also one of the most pristine with incredible oyster and shellfish industry and fishing industry. You know, so we already knew it was a priority, but how do we choose within that large landscape where to focus our work? And what we heard time and time again in those meetings was look at the east side of Willapa Bay because there's such opportunity there. It's largely undeveloped, and it's really an incredibly rich resource. And if there were major changes to happen, and back, 2006, 2007, there was still quite a lot of development speculation, that might happen there because of the scenic views of Willapa Bay in particular. And so we identified creek mouths, river mouths along that shoreline that we thought were incredibly important ecologically and also were fundable, which is a huge part of, unfortunately, how we choose our work.
But money makes it happen. So when you say fundable, okay, so how did that work in this case?
Sure.
Where did the funding package come from?
Yeah, it's a little trickier in Willapa Bay because unlike the Columbia, there aren't as many Endangered Species Act federally listed species, and so there's not as much money available. However, there's a beautiful funding source that comes out of U.S. Fish and Wildlife, which is called the Coastal Wetlands Fund, and it is $1 million grant. And I was able to apply for this grant. It was a 35-page application. So it's much like writing a book about the importance of the area. And Washington does really well. This is a national competition. And I think the year that we applied and were awarded, six applications were awarded in Washington because of just the richness of the place. So we were awarded some money from that, which went to this project as well as several others that I'm working on. And we also got money from the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, as well as from Washington's Salmon Recovery Funding Board, which is administered by the Recreation and Conservation Office.
Okay. Well, tell us about the Mount St. Helens deal. What was that? What exactly happened there? What did you pick up?
Well, I can start on that, and maybe Nadja can fill in some additional details on it. Actually, the genesis of that work was that the company that owns the land on the south side of Mount St. Helens is a timber company, but these days a lot of timber companies are really in the real estate business.
Right.
And they saw an opportunity with this land because it looks over Swift Reservoir to create a recreation home business. So looking at both the scenic value and some of the endangered species issues along Pine Creek, which is in that area, we started a project working with them to see if there was a way that we could use conservation to achieve both of our objectives. So this was a partnership where we worked with them to limit the area that they might develop because they actually had the right to develop it. And instead, we purchased some of that land, about 3,300 acres, which is the part that's most threatened, and we used Endangered Species Act money for part of that. And then we also purchased conservation easements on several hundred thousand more acres. I said 100,000, several thousand more acres. I wish. So that they gave up the right to develop it. And that way it can still continue to be harvested, which is actually part of our work. We often try to continue historic uses. So that way they can keep their business going, and it serves to help the tax base for that county and all. But the part that's the most critical is conserved relative to the endangered species like the bull trout.
Okay. And then we've also done some deals recently, a deal on the Columbia River. Where on the Columbia River?
Yeah, this is a really exciting summer for us. You know, we closed that big deal on Mount St. Helens, 3,300 acres in May, and then just now the North Nema. But in June, we were able to have a property transfer to us called Pierce Island. And this is an incredibly important island right below Beacon Rock. So it's really neat because people can climb Beacon Rock and look down right on it. It's also a popular place for people to boat. And it's a really special 136-acre island with a few endangered plants on it. So it's incredibly sensitive. And much of our work, you know, really purchasing the land or getting the land transferred to us or getting the easement is just the first step in a forever process, right? You know, we get the property or, you know, acquire, conserve the property. Then we stabilize the property. We figure out, you know, what needs to be done to make it more natural. In some cases, we have to return it to its more historic state, maybe not completely as it was 120 years ago, but closer and better habitat. And then we steward it in perpetuity. And so Pierce Island is an example of one where we really have to do some very active weed management in order to maintain those sensitive plants.
I was interested in your literature on the Pierce Island. I think you described it as one of the fewer, one of the last natural islands, something like that, in the river. I presume that, unlike an island that was made from dredge spoils, for instance, like Sand Island down here, this one was there from the beginning. Is that the distinction there? about Pierce Island?
I'm afraid I actually don't know a lot about that. We actually have of interest might be that we worked with Foss Maritime and actually have a conservation lease. I think it's a 100-year conservation lease on about 700 acres of land in the Columbia All Islands. And part of the reason it's a lease, that he actually, the owner of Foss, originally wanted to, I think, donate or at least bargain sell some of those islands to us. And the ownership of those islands and their origin is so complicated that that we just decided a lease was easier.
Sure.
And the reason it's so hard is they change the boundaries all the time. So defining what you're actually donating or selling gets pretty tricky.
Yeah.
I'd like to just follow up a little bit on and emphasize the point that Nadia was making about how the work we do is in perpetuity. I don't think we've emphasized that enough in what we've been talking about today, because that is sort of the essence of what we're doing. What all of the easements that we hold and the lands that we own all have a guarantee that we will hold and manage those lands forever. And that's a long time. In fact, I have a hard time imagining all of that, but that's really the promise. And so that means that so much of the work we're doing is for people we don't know yet, because they're not here.
Sure.
But we do know that the population continues to grow. There's always pressure on our lands for more development and higher use. And so this work will really make it better for the long term.
That's very foresighted. Yeah. Let's go back to partnerships, because that is sort of what's going on in just about every sector of the public world these days, or the nonprofit world, is building partnerships. And it's been interesting down here in the last 20 years at the mouth of the Columbia River, the various conservation deals seem to typically involve at least two, maybe sometimes three players and so forth. And so who have been your partners at the Columbia Land Trust?
I will say we do nothing by ourselves. Everything we do is benefited by our really strong partnerships in Oregon and Washington generally, in our region, and locally here as well. And I'm really happy to be placed here. I'm on the second floor of the post office. Feel free to come visit. And that hallway I call the Conservation Nonprofit Hallway because it has Columbia Land Trust on it. It has Clatsop Soil and Water Conservation District. It has the North Coast Watershed Association, as well as having CREST, the Columbia River Estuary Study Task Force. And because we're all there, it's much easier for us to keep communicating and collaborating. Oh, I forgot one. The Nature Conservancy of Washington, that manages the Ellsworth Preserve on Willapa Bay, is on that hallway also. So it's a really great opportunity for us to, you know, just walk down the hall and ask each other questions, collaborate on grants, decide who's the best partner to address particular landowner needs in terms of conservation and restoration. We also work closely with the other local land trust here, which is also an excellent organization, the North Coast Land Conservancy, based down in Seaside. And so we, you know, when a landowner reaches out to one of us or the other and it seems that one or the other might be a better fit, then we will communicate around that. We'll also collaborate. We have a property in common, actually, at the Twilight Eagle Sanctuary. So if you take Highway 30 east here from Astoria, you'll see a Lewis and Clark sign around Napa. And if you go over there on Burnside Loop, there's this great overlook where you can see migratory waterfowl and eagles quite often. And we own part of that property. North Coast Land Conservancy owns part of that property. And the county owns part of the property with, I believe, a easement from the Oregon Eagle Foundation on it.
Okay.
So, you know, that's another way that we collaborate. We'll have volunteer work parties there once a year, both the North Coast Land Conservancy and Columbia Land Trust.
Okay. Well, I'm always interested in everyone, my guests' backgrounds and how they came to be involved. So, Jennifer, what's your background before the Land Trust? Where'd you go to school? That sort of thing.
Oh, well, I'm a native Oregonian.
Okay.
And I went to school at Portland State University and have a degree in geography.
What year did you graduate?
Oh, do I have to tell you?
Well, I'm 71. What are you?
73.
All right. Same time.
Yeah. And so, anyway, I did start my career as a land use planner. And I decided that at some point that I wanted to get into management. So eventually I worked into management and retired from the city of Portland in 2010, so 3 years ago.
And you managed the city of Portland's lands, is that right?
Actually, I changed my career focus and I retired as the chief financial officer at the city of Portland.
That's right.
But I retired a little bit early so that I could devote myself to land conservation.
And so what motivated you to get involved with the Columbia Land Trust? I mean, you're past president, so you've been really involved.
I was so impressed with the work that this organization is doing, and it really fit with my personal values. Mm-hmm. So I just thought they were doing great work, and it's just gotten better and better.
Okay. So, Nadi, what's your background?
I'm almost a native Portlander. I was actually born in Germany, but my parents were native Portlanders. So, and we moved back when I was 2 years old. And I got started doing this work when I was probably 6 years old at Portland Audubon. I was an Audubon youth, and I loved getting out in nature from the very beginning. And I was always involved in OMSI camps and things like that. So I'm really a product of that, you know, outdoor school OMSI kind of experience. And I volunteered at the Oregon Zoo, what back then was the Washington Park Zoo, with the birds of prey.
Sure.
Through high school.
Yeah.
And then I went to college on the East Coast, came back, got my did a bunch of environmental education and naturalist work for Metro Parks and Green Spaces, amongst others. And then finally went back and got my master's in environmental science and management from UC Santa Barbara.
Okay. So you've been involved in this kind of work for your whole career, it sounds like.
My whole life.
Yeah, yeah. Well, if our listeners want to learn more about the Land Trust or get involved, what should they do?
Well, we have a website, columbialandtrust.org, and we really want to put out a call for invitation for people to come to a work party we're having tomorrow. It's out on our Wallacut River property, and if you go to Stringtown Road, is that right, Nadia?
Yes. Yeah, so if you go north across from Astoria up towards Owako, before you get to the downtown of Owako, you're going to take the second left on Stringtown, which is actually a loop. There's a sign there for the Owako Airport, and the property is 100 acres there on the Wallacut and on Baker's Bay on the Columbia River. Really beautiful old farm, and we're going to be cleaning that up tomorrow. Second work party on that site needs a lot of love for perpetuity.
Yeah, so I'll just really quickly run through. We're going to have a tour of this area on September 28th. We have a fundraising auction that's in Portland on Friday, September 13th. We need people to volunteer to come out and be like what we call site steward of our land. You can become a member. We have a quarterly newsletter, all kinds of opportunities.
Great. Well, Nadia Gardner and Jennifer Sims, thanks so much for being here today. They are with the Columbia Land Trust, and this is After Deadline, a joint production of Coast Community Radio and The Daily Historian, and our sound engineer is Terry Wilson.